Tony's. Of course. The very place for a very special occasion.
Romance and food, they're almost inseparable. And as Valentine's Day approaches, it can be hard to find that perfect restaurant. You know, the Lady and the Tramp restaurant.
No, this way, Pidge. I have my own private entrance.
Or that perfect meal.
First, we fix the table.
Here's your bones, Tony.
Okay, bones. Bones! What's the matter for you, Joe? I break your face. Tonight, the butcher, he's get the best in the house.
Okay, Tony, you're the boss.
But when the meal is right...
Now, here you are, the best spaghetti in the town.
And a candle flickers with a little music to set the mood.
For this is the night, it's a beautiful night.
Even a shared spaghetti noodle can be magical. But when the atmosphere is wonky, or someone's stressed out, or the food is just off, it can really kill the mood. So today, on KCUR Central Standard, we're going to start off with some Valentine's tips for making a meal romantic. Later on, the food critics will be here to take us out on a search for great cocktails. I'm Gina Kaufman, and now let's talk to Susan Wiegand. She's with us from St. Louis, and she's the author of a book called Cooking as Courtship. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Gina.
Why do you think food and romance are so closely intertwined?
Well, gosh, a lot of that is just food is going to happen and romance is going to happen in the context of food. So it just has to happen. And we eat with people that we love. So there you are. And you do it right or you do it wrong. So
it's inevitable.
It's inevitable. It's not a thing you can just say, oh, I love you, but I'm not going to eat with you. Like, that's not going to happen.
Your book is called Cooking as Courtship. What do you mean by courtship exactly? I mean, how do you understand that term?
Well, the book looks, definitely there's a lot of romantic courtship, but the premise is that you court people all of the time. And it might be your family members that you already know, but you just want them to feel warmly towards you. And maybe you're trying to solve a problem, but maybe you just love to make your family want to be around you. Or it's friends or lots of friends. We love throwing parties sometimes, and don't worry too much about it. We just like our friends to feel welcome at our home and court them in that way. But also business or colleagues or whatever it is, you want people to feel warmly towards you, and food is just a wonderful way to do that.
This is not, hello, this is not a cookbook you've written. It's really a treatise on resetting priorities in a way, like taking the emphasis away from a show-offy meal and thinking more about the person who is coming over and what will make that person feel comfortable and loved. Can you explain
exactly,
that?
Exactly. And you often have cases in life where somebody might be very uncomfortable around you. And there could be a lot of reasons for that. And it could very well be that they're nervous because they feel romantic towards you and they're just not sure about it. Or it might be because they're intimidated by you or, you know, whatever the reason is, you may very well be sharing food or offering food to somebody who isn't that comfortable and might not feel comfortable accepting food from you. And so then you really have to bring your courtship skills into play, because you can really make strides forward in your relationship by offering them something in a way that they can accept.
So and what do you think are some of the most common mistakes people make, or like thoughts people neglect to have when getting ready to cook for someone else?
Well, I think, you know, people are generally fairly self-involved. And so when they're cooking, they're often thinking about what that will show off their skills or what they think will be neat. And not that much thought is sometimes given to the people who are going to be receiving it. And whether, you know, we do worry about allergies, and that's excellent. We should definitely worry about allergies.
You do not want to kill your guests.
You do not want to, or have to go to the hospital. It's very bad. But you also don't want to serve things that people don't like or that are things that are sort of intimidating foods when you're in a courtship atmosphere. You don't want to challenge people with something that they might be very unusual for them, or they just might not like. My favorite story was I was invited to a tiny dinner party, and the woman served okra. Like, that was it. And, like, there's only four of us, and you could have checked if we eat okra, because it's a very, not everybody likes that. And so it was that's just what she liked. And she wanted
she
to
really
cook it.
Liked
and
okra.
So you're like, well, that's great. but I'm getting really drunk because I can't eat the food. Is what's happening.
Well, you're mentioning something, though. I mean, like, the mishaps can be memorable, and they can be memorable. I mean, within a certain range, they can be almost memorable. Good. Like, I mean, I know that it's just a cartoon, but that Lady and the Tramp scene is such a classic. And especially when the two dogs meet over they're biting into the same spaghetti. I mean,
oh,
that's
yes.
Like,
and you know, that whole scene reminds me of one of my most romantic evenings I ever had with a friend of mine. And we were at a restaurant in San Francisco in the foggy part of town on a foggy night, and the electricity went out. And it was an Italian restaurant it was a long time ago when kitchens weren't that open, but it was open enough that when the lights went out, the flames in the kitchen suddenly came into relief. And the waiters, it was an Italian place, and the waiters had candles on the table so fast, you couldn't believe it. And it was so utterly romantic. I think it was a friend, and I think we did end up making out that night. It was just so wonderful. So yes, I don't even remember what was on the table. It was a place we'd go to. It was fine, but it didn't matter what the food was. It was fine, but the atmosphere is so important, and especially when you're in a season where you want to do something romantic and have a really good feeling, whoever it's with. You know, I like to do Valentine's Day with friends a lot. Sometimes, you know, with a lover, whatever you're doing, you definitely want it to be romantic.
Well, talk about atmosphere and presentation. Like, what are some specific tips? I know that your style is really not to say do this or do that. It's more think about it this way or approach it that way. So what are some ways to think about atmosphere and presentation that really take that other person into account?
Well, the first thing, I think one of the most important things after your house is clean or the restaurant you go to is not frightening. The lighting is so important to how people feel and how they connect with other people. And generally speaking, lower lighting really brings people alive. However, you need to be aware, because I have had people in my house who get really uncomfortable in low lighting. And you can tell.
It has to be high enough to see.
Oh yeah, but you know, candlelight's okay. You don't have to see much when you're eating food that you didn't spend too much time on presentation. So it's not like, you know, you need to see, you find a romantic thing. Lots of points of light are really good when you're arranging the light, if it's in your own home.
What do you mean, lots of points of light?
Well, as opposed to one light somewhere.
Gotcha.
Having more sources of light and lower sources of light. So having your sources of light coming from different heights, but especially lower heights, it creates a really nice even light. There are fewer shadows on people's faces. Lights coming down from above are not particularly flattering no matter what.
Definitely.
So
if
you have
light, fluorescent.
Especially turn off all your fluorescent lights, all of them. Turn off, in fact, incandescent light. I will light an entire room with party lights, and it will just be like, talk about lots of sources of light, like 100 sources of light.
You know,
and it's magical and it's quite bright, but the light's coming from lots of places. And also dimmers. Put dimmers on everything so you can control. But then be aware you know, sometimes they're uncomfortable because it's too much light, but they can also be, there are people who are a little nervous if there's not enough light. So you want to be aware of others. Be
just
aware
kind
of them.
Watch people.
And be aware. And if they seem edgy or they keep like going to go turn a light on, you can say, can we just try it for 5 minutes?
Well, so
you just give me 5 minutes. And if you're still uncomfortable, we'll turn them up again. But the lighting is so important. The other thing, if you're eating, whether you're at a restaurant or at home, one thing that makes people very uncomfortable is if things are dirty. So when you're, you know, people have different levels of sensitivity to that. So if you're doing dinner at your house, even if it's just for your own partner, just make sure everything is clean. Make sure the bathroom is clean. Going into a dirty bathroom is very not romantic. So that those are things that, you know, it doesn't have to be a big deal, but just make sure it's not terrible.
So when it comes to food, what kinds of questions do you recommend that we all ask ourselves when we're setting the menu for a romantic meal?
Well, you don't want to work too hard on it because you don't want to be exhausted. You don't want to have much opportunity for failure. You want it to be pretty simple. You want to make sure that you're really confident that the other person or people are going to enjoy whatever you make. So, you know, not to be terribly experimental with things that you're not even sure what it tastes like. You know, things that make something that you're confident is delicious. And yeah, there are certain foods that people just find delicious. In America, Italian sorts of things are
you sort can of almost reliable.
Go, yeah, eat with a lasagna, make sure it's vegetarian if it needs to be, but you almost cannot go wrong with lasagna and salad. You could sandwiches. People just love sandwiches and making delicious sandwiches, having a panini grill and letting people make their own sandwiches. Things that are not too hard that people can make their own choices. So they're very comfortable with what they're eating. That's if you're having a party or even if it's just two people. But having it be simple, you know, having a pasta or a risotto, I love because you can talk to people while you're making it. It doesn't take as much attention as people think it does. And you can put whatever it is that people like, that you like and your partners like into it. And it, you know, it takes 15 minutes and you just, you know, have a glass of wine and talk. And when it's ready, you sit down and you eat it. It's a graceful thing to cook when others are around.
There's a section in your book all about stocking the kitchen, and I think it is easy to believe that you need a lot of fancy gadgets to make an acceptable meal. What do we really need? I mean, it kind of reminds me sometimes, I knew someone who was interested in going camping, and I don't think he ever did. I think he mostly gathered camping gear.
Well, you need very little to cook. You need a knife and a cutting board, as far as I'm concerned. And I serve a lot of meals with a knife and a cutting board and just leave it in the kitchen for people to enjoy. A bowl. I mean, eventually utensils are a good idea, but you can get very far without forks. But wooden spoons, I mean, having wooden spoons you like to use, having bowls, having, you know, several sizes of bowls. I actually go to hardwood suppliers and get chunks of hardwood, sand them and oil them. So I have really nice cutting boards and lots of them. And I have like 10 of them, and they'll all be in use, you know, different things, chopping things, serving things.
So, 10 cutting boards is worth the, like, one of the trendy new gadgets.
I entertain a lot, and I put them on my counter so that I don't smash things on my counters and break them. But but bowls and cutting boards and knives, have good knives, and we have a knife sharpener, and that is wonderful as well.
So I've got to jump in and ask, what about if this is a romantic dinner, extending the invitation? I mean, when the idea is to court someone who you're not already, like, dating or whatever, that can be the hardest part.
Well, Valentine's Day is a very bad night to do that. And the main reason is, you know, the stakes are just so high. But if you're trying
to extra forward, come over for Valentine's Day.
Oh, seriously. But what you can do and what I have done is think about throwing a small party on Valentine's Day for a number of friends who may not be doing romantic evenings. One year I did a true lovers party, and what I had to explain to people was, you don't need to be a true lover right now, but you would be if you had the chance. And so I had, so everybody got it, and everybody in my house that night was somebody who would love to be in a loving relationship, whether they were or not. And it was a great group of people, and I think some people met each other that night because it was, you know, it just a nice way to have people together. It was Valentine's Day. The lights obviously were very nice. And you could do that if you had somebody had your eye on. Invite them over. Say, well, I'm having a little party. I would love for you to come over.
That's a nice idea. But what if you are already in a relationship? I mean, like, and even say you live together and you share lots and lots of meals. How do you make one meal feel special in that context?
Well, you know, leaving a note, inviting your partner who even lives with you, leaving a note somewhere a few days ahead of time saying, please be sure to be here at 8 o'clock on Valentine's Day and ready for dinner, or, you know, a nice little love note or a picture or putting a flower on their dresser with a note.
That is so sweet. And I hope my husband's not listening, because I'd like to use that trick.
Oh, I did it. I found some we had an orchid show here in St. Louis, and I got this beautiful orchid, and I put that, and it was just with a thank you note for my husband, because he's been really nice to me.
That does bring me to something. I mean, when you wrote this book, you wrote that someone writing a book on cooking as courtships should be luckier in love than you had been, but that such a person might not be inclined to sit down and write a book. It sounds like your luck has changed in that department.
Yeah, and I'm actually having a very hard time writing about clothing, which is my topic now. But yes, I've been very lucky in love, as a matter of fact.
Well, congratulations, Susan Wiegand. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and happy Valentine's Day to everyone.
To you, too. Susan's book is called Cooking as Courtship, and when we come back, we'll get you out of the house with our annual search for the best cocktails in town. I'm Gina Kaufman on KCUR's Central Standard. We're back. The food critics are here on KCUR Central Standard. They're going to help us find the best cocktails in and around Kansas City just in time for your big Valentine's date. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today's critics are Jenny Vergara of Feast Magazine, Mary Block of Around the Block KC, and Pete Doolin, beer author and connoisseur. Hi, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What I want to find out from each of you, what is your very favorite cocktail right now, like your drink of choice in Kansas City? Pete?
Sure. Right now, there's a cocktail at the Rieger, and it's called Oranishi.
Whoa, can you say that again?
Oranishi. And it's named after a character from a Kill Bill film that's a female warrior. And it's a whiskey cocktail. The bartender that created it, her name's Julie, I can't remember her last name, but it has Japanese whiskey, J. Rieger whiskey, Aperol, which is like a bitter orange herb flavored ingredient, cava, and then a little bit of passion fruit and lemon.
How would you describe the experience of drinking this cocktail?
It's really well balanced. I mean, you've got the whiskey as a base. It's floral and fruity, but not like overly sweet. So it's very sophisticated, and it's a beautiful presentation. It has just this really delicate flower in it, so it kind of greets your nose as you're drinking it.
I love for my nose to be greeted.
Yeah. And yeah, the whiskey kind of holds it all together.
Oranishi. Yes. That sounds good. Mary, what about you?
At Lydia's, they have a blood orange Cosmo. And I like it because I'm not a big cocktail drinker. I'd really rather have a glass of wine. But I do like a margarita once in a while. And this is, even though it's made with vodka instead of tequila, it's kind of a riff on a margarita. It's made with blood orange vodka. It has triple sec and blood orange juice. And it's just really smooth, and I like it a lot.
Cool. Okay, so that's the blood orange Cosmo at Lydia's. Jenny, your drink of choice in Kansas City right now.
So I'm a girl that likes to talk gin and drink whiskey. So if somebody asks me what I prefer, I usually always end up with a gin, say it's gin, but somehow I always end up drinking whiskey. But in this case, I'm going to stay true to form and actually do have a gin cocktail to recommend at Manifesto. It's an old school one, been on the menu since the beginning, and it's the Brothers Perryman. And the Brothers Perryman has Plymouth Gin, Bitter Truth Elderflower, and Campari, which gives it that beautiful red color. You have to kind of like bitter when you are a gin drinker, with kind of the pine notes, obviously, and Campari as well. But this drink, for some reason, is just very balanced to me. It's an easy sipper. I always kind of start my journey at Manifesto with like an old school favorite.
So we've got an old school drink, mentioned here. And then we've also got a couple of, it sounds like, really original creations being recommended. We'll get to romance in cocktails, but what is trendy in cocktails right now, just generally?
I would say smoke. A lot of cocktails are infused with smoke. I wouldn't say it's a new trend. It's been there for a while. But at the W Bar in Lee's Summit, I think they're actually trying to get a patent for a mechanism that pipes smoke into four drinks at once, which is sounds pretty amazing to me.
That does. That's something that maybe we should investigate with our intrepid reporters sometime.
Absolutely.
What else is trendy?
I think fat washing drinks seems to be a thing right now.
And what is that?
Well, it's basically you take fat and you put your booze of your choice in it, and you basically kind of marinate it a bit together, and then you strain it out, and it gives an interesting kind of rich mouthfeel to what it is, and it flavors it slightly. I mean, there is something to it. It's kind of like the smoke effect, and I think all of this is kind of along with the trend of whiskey and bourbon kind of coming to the forefront. Some of these heavier and stronger liquors can take fat washing or smoking or some of these other treatments to it. But that's something where you'll see a lot.
Whiskey and bourbon are trends?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm trendier than I thought.
Yeah, no, it's for the last couple of years.
I'd also say mocktails, which not necessarily a trend, but I think what's different about them is that over the past couple of years, you've seen local bartenders that have created cocktails without alcohol in them and doing increasingly sophisticated versions of them. They're usually made to order, and they're highly original and just as sophisticated.
Fresh ingredients, too.
Absolutely. A lot of fresh herbs, infusions, fresh juice. And you can find those at Thubiger, Manifesto, Blue Stem, Sava.
Well, maybe we'll get into more detail about some of those later.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll call 816-235-2888 to tell us where you get your favorite cocktail in town. We are compiling an official guide, you guys, so we need you to call us and tell us about the drinks that need to be on our list. 816-235-2888. And we were just talking about trends, but not everyone wants a trendy cocktail. Some of us like the classics. So KCUR's Laura Ziegler checked out a new place with an old-timey vibe and an owner who kind of favors the timeless beverage. Let's head to Brown and Lowe to meet Harry Murphy.
Laura Ziegler.
Hi, Laura.
I'm so glad to meet you.
How you doing?
I appreciate you doing this for me.
Sure. If you want to sit down and do
this. Yeah.
So meet Harry Murphy, described to me as the bartender of bartenders in Kansas City. He's the owner of Harry's Country Club Bar, as well as the recently opened Brown and Lowe restaurant, both in the historic River Market. Murphy came to Kansas City from Ottawa, Kansas, via Lawrence.
And I drove a Pepsi truck for a while and missed stuff. I went to Rockhurst College, had an English degree. Mm-hmm. So you start looking for trucks to drive become a bartender eventually. Stand behind a bar and talk about what Moby Dick really means or whatever.
He doesn't tend bar much anymore, but when he did, Harry wasn't the kind of bartender who liked to spend 15 minutes tossing a cucumber-infused gin cocktail with a sprig of rosemary in it. He's the kind who'll tell you a joke, talk about the sports scores, and shoot the breeze with just about anyone. This is the kind of place where people wander up and down the bar talking to each other. I even spot Councilman Quentin Lucas doing just that. Don't get me wrong, you can get a cocktail here that takes a long time to make, with infused alcohol, maybe even an herb sticking up. But Murphy sees people going back to the classics.
Well, the classic cocktail usually has just a few elements to it. The new mixologist stuff can have six or seven things.
And Murphy says the margarita is usually the most popular drink, has been for years. And here they make a classic he says people love once they've tasted it. It's called a French 75, and bar manager Ruth Dyer mixes one up for me.
We're using an ounce and a half of Rieger gin, so we're using a nice local Kansas City gin. We do 3/4 ounce of simple syrup, do 3/4 ounce of freshly squeezed lemon juice and 4 dashes of acid phosphate.
She gives it a good shake.
Give it a good shake.
Adds a splash of Prosecco.
Nice dry Prosecco.
And voila, it's the French 75. Never had it before, but it's a classic, and it's yummy.
You're a lucky woman, Laura.
Lucky, indeed. I want Laura's assignment. That was Laura Ziegler talking to Harry Murphy at Brown & Lowe in the City Market. Mary, you have a French 75 on your list.
I do, from Savard in Westport. And it's very similar to what Laura just described. You can have it with cognac or gin, and this has lemon and Prosecco. And it's just a really light, refreshing drink. If you like sparkling wine, it's a nice compromise.
So refreshing is the key there?
I think so.
Well, I'd like to introduce another guest today who is not a high-end cocktail drinker. He's here to represent the everyman, David Hudnall of The Pitch. Good morning. Is this the earliest you've started talking about what to drink on a Friday?
Maybe, yeah. Actually, I had a couple drinks before I came into the studio.
I can't tell if you're joking.
That was a joke.
What is your philosophy when it comes to ordering cocktails?
Well, I like all the drinks that our panelists have been discussing. I drink those sometimes, but usually I'm probably going for a more basic, cheaper, ordinary drink, two mixers type of thing. And so I think one of the ones that's sort of underrated is tequila and soda. Lots of the times, the two mixer drinks are like whiskey, Coke, gin and tonic, vodka, soda, and people seem sort of afraid to bring tequila into that. And I think that's just like one that I think people would like if they tried it more. I sort of get weird looks from people occasionally when I order a mixed drink with tequila.
From such people as bartenders?
Not from bartenders, more from people who maybe just don't drink quite that much or just sort of used to ordering, I like a gin and tonic. I've had that for 15 years and that's what I drink. The trick with tequila and soda is you have to get silver tequila. There's silver and gold tequila, and silver has more it's got like more bite and it's just like sort of more refreshing and crisp. Get it with a lime. But it's sort of a pain because sometimes you have to, not every like bar there well is a silver tequila. So you sort of have to, it's like a two-part question where you have to be like, what is your well tequila? Is it silver? If so, yes, I'll have that. If not, what is the cheapest shelf silver tequila?
Huh. You are a knowledgeable drink orderer.
yeah, maybe.
Is there a difference from one bar to another when it comes to simpler drinks like what you've been talking about, or like a Jack and Coke or a Scotch and soda, or is it just stronger or weaker, cheaper, expensive?
I think there's a difference between like what Harry was just talking about or on that segment. Like that's sort of a traditional drink, but it's made really well, right? Like there's a lot of care put into that, whereas at a dive or something, they're just kind of throwing a couple things in and they're not, So I think that's one difference.
So it's the care that gets put into the drink that would distinguish one from the other?
I guess so. Yeah.
Where are your favorite watering holes as like a maybe low maintenance drink lover?
I feel like I go to Che Charlie is a good...
Here.
Dive in Westport.
Yeah, High Dive I go to a lot. Frickin' Frack. I live in Midtown, so those are kind of the easy breezy sort of divey spots. Sometimes I work downtown, so sometimes I will like sneak out of work and go to the Peanut downtown, which is a good place to sort of hide.
The Ship is another.
Ship, yeah.
Any other recommendations for a low-maintenance drink from our panel here?
I like Tower Tavern over on Martini Corner.
All right. Well, Thank you for helping us compile those sort of, as you put it, easy breezy places. Mm-hmm. David Hudnall of The Pitch, it's been great talking to you.
Nice talking to you also.
And now let's talk to some of our callers. We've got Sam in Westport at 816-235-2888. Hi, Sam.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, how about you?
I'm doing really well.
What are you going to recommend or share with us?
So I've got this theory. The best way, well, I stole it from my wife. The best way to find out what a bar is all about is to order an old-fashioned.
Go on.
So I've been to a lot of the bars in town, and sometimes you get a little bit of bourbon and soda water, and sometimes you get, you know, the whole Four Gospels version. And from what I've found, if you see the fanciest old-fashioned, head on over to what's the place by Michael Smith?
Extra Virgin?
Right now. That's the one. They have the big ice cube, and it's real fancy. But if you want, sort of, for my money, the best old-fashioned in town, Westport Cafe is that one.
Which is obviously in Westport. Okay, so why is that the best one in town?
You know, it's probably the simplest one, but it's got a twist of orange in it to make it fancy. So, you know, it's a nice, simple drink, but if you want to feel like you're classy but having just a normal time, then that's the drink for you, which I feel like is the whole idea of Westport Cafe being in Westport.
Well,
so it's the best old-fashioned that matches the bar.
Well, Sam, thank you so much for that recommendation and for your theory about old-fashions being like the litmus test of bars.
No problem. Thank you.
You know, Jenny, you're recommending an old-fashioned at a Kansas City bar.
Oh, I am. I'm sure I am here somewhere.
At Julep.
Thank you. Actually, I'm recommending the Julep at Julep. But they do have a whole section that is dedicated to old fashions that are based on the country from which the bourbon is from. So they have a Japan, an Ireland, a Canada, which I thought was kind of interesting. So, I think generally what we're talking about, even kind of back to what David said and to what the caller was saying, it is a curious problem to have when you're a craft cocktail drinker and then you go into more of a casual bar and you try to order a drink, because it's like, so what do you get? What should be your go-to? Where you're not just drinking kind of the straight well, you want something that's, you know, tasty to your palate. And I think the tequila and soda actually is a really good. I mean, there's always those go-tos that everybody has. Mine right now is whiskey and ginger beer, if I can get it, or ginger ale.
So where do you get a good pour of that?
Well, it's more difficult than you want to believe, because a lot of people don't have ginger ale.
I believe you.
They do what they call bartender's ginger ale, or fake ginger ale, which is basically a splash of Pepsi. It's got no ginger in it whatsoever. It's a splash of Pepsi and some bitters.
Pepsi's not ginger ale.
Somehow they think that takes it across the line. It's kind of missing the point of ginger altogether, which if I can wipe out anything, I would like to wipe out that as an option. But if you can get true ginger beer and, just something, you know, Jameson or something kind of normal whiskey level to pour in there. I like it Town Tavern. That's where I go to get my kind of my casual drinks.
Well, you're also recommending a few classics like Manhattans and Sazeracs at the Jack's Fish House.
Yeah, you know, I have to say, this is one of those examples where the bar is really made by the head bartender, Kenny Kors. And the reason that you go to drink at Jack's, located inside of Jack's Fish House and Oyster Bar down on the West Plaza, is to get Kenny's drinks. I mean, he's just so, so talented and so warm. He's the perfect bartender on all fronts. But he has a drink called the Linus or Lucy and Linus that I really like, that has apple brandy and herbal liqueur and some applejack, a little allspice dram, which is a flavored liqueur that is flavored with allspice and some roasted pears. It's just a really beautiful kind of fall, easy sipper that I love. But, you know, most everything that Kenny does there is with such care. So that's a great recommendation of not a bar destination, but a bar within a restaurant that would be definitely worth seeking out if you're looking for a great cocktail.
I love restaurant bars. Mary, you are recommending a blueberry cilantro margarita, which sounds sort of like the opposite of like the Jack and Coke.
Yeah, I would say that's true. It's at Tavern in the Village, and this particular riff on a margarita has been on the menu since they opened. And They use, obviously, tequila, elderflower liqueur, fresh lime, fresh blueberries, and cilantro, and then it's on the rocks. And it's just got a – it's enough different than a basic margarita. You can see the blueberries floating in the glass.
Well, when KCUR Central Standard returns, we are going to keep talking drinks, and this is the last call for calls, 816-235-2888. Let's knock them back. Exercise our elbows. Come on. We want to get your drinks on our list. After this break, I'm Gina Kaufman. It is 10:44 in the morning, and all is well on KCUR Central Standard, where we're talking about cocktails because, of course, we're doing that at 10:44 in the morning. I'm Gina Kaufman with the food critics Jenny Vergara, Mary Block, and Pete Doolin. Hi again, you guys.
Hello.
Hello.
There.
So we've got lots of calls. Let's hit those. I want to get to some more of your recommendations, hopefully within this hour, because you guys have some great ones. But let's hear from Elizabeth in Waldo. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How about you?
I'm great.
What do you like to drink?
I really enjoy the Corruption Gimlet over at Tomstown Distilling Co. in the Crossroads. I'm not a huge gin drinker, but I love their Corruption Gin.
Okay, well, so that sounds pretty good. Tell us what it's like to drink this beverage.
So their gin is, I guess it's called a new Western style gin. It's super botanical tasting. It's not really like a Christmas gin at all. And then when you mix that with the fresh lime juice, it's really refreshing. You can just sip on it for a while and have a great time. It's a great drink.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Mary, what can you add?
Well, I'm not a big gin drinker either, but that is one gin that I could just sip and drink straight up. It has, I think, 17 botanicals in it, so it's really flavorful, and it just tastes great.
I've never heard anybody call it Christmas gin, but that's a good, that's a really good name. But we should mention that gin right now can take on any kind of flavor. I mean, there's ones that lean more clean, like a cucumber flavor, and there's some that really do dial back on, obviously, the more kind of pine essence. So
we have a lot of great gin that's being made in town also that mm-hmm. you're seeing. If there is another trend, it's local bartenders are using locally made spirits, mm-hmm. and we've got a great variety from Jay Rieger's gin,
Tomstown,
SD Strong in Parkville. Mm-hmm. They make a fantastic gin that incorporates a lot of botanicals in it as well, and you pick out some citrus notes mm-hmm. to complement the
lifted
juniper.
Lifted Spirits, maybe.
Lifted Spirits is new. Yeah, they do gin as well.
Mm-hmm. What are some bars you might head to if you wanted to find a bar that really is doing this well, incorporating the local spirits?
Well, Manifesto and the Rieger, because Rieger is making their own.
I have to say, even high-end bars to casual bars, I've seen our local spirits represented. So
it's pretty common.
I don't mm-hmm. know that you have to go to a fancy bar to find it. I think it's pretty common.
We have another call that I'm going to get to in just a second. But while we're talking about this, Mary, you are recommending a spirit flight.
I am at Tomstown. They do make all their own spirits, and they have a sampling of them. One is the Eli's Strong Arm Vodka, the Prendergast Royal Gold Bourbon, and the McElroy's Corruption Gin that we just talked about. And I think it's a great way to taste the spirits on their own and get a real sense of how they're made.
Let's talk to Gene in Fairway. Hi, Gene.
Hey, how you going? Thanks for calling. Got some knowledgeable people there on your panel, but I was just calling in to suggest one that's kind of forgotten. I'm glad you guys were on gin, but a Bombay gin, preferably Bombay gin sapphire, gin gimlet. The best one I've had, it's been years since I drank in a bar or bartended, but best ones I've had, I would say, would be at the Raphael off the plaza and Majestic Steakhouse downtown. It's a nice kind of a crisp, tart balance with lime and a good gin, and good for summer or winter. Good old style good drink.
Thanks, Gene. That's a fun recommendation. And, while we're talking about hotel bars, someone here had a recommendation.
Me.
It was Jenny.
Pick me. I want to talk about Myers Hotel Bar that's in Tonganoxie, Kansas. And Tonganoxie, if you're not familiar, is kind of halfway between here and Lawrence, estimating. I mean, it's probably a little closer to Lawrence maybe than here.
And you might not want to drive home from there after too many drinks.
Well, you just have a designated driver. You just have to plan ahead. But this place is open Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and it's in an old, from the 1800s, an old hotel. And it's very charming. And it's a husband and wife that own it. She used to run the John Brown Underground Bar in Lawrence. She was kind of one of the head bar manager there. And she and her husband have opened this place up. And it's a really cute, clever, fantastic place. It's really interesting. There's like locals from Tongi that are hanging out and having a beer. There's people that drive in from Lawrence specifically to have cocktails. There's also a Kansas City contingency.
What do you get there?
You know, the menu changes so frequently. It's one of those where I usually pick something seasonal off the menu. I mean, it's very ingredient driven. It's very, you know, whatever's in season kind of driven. I've had an apricot whiskey sour there that was fantastic. But they also do the basics. If you ask them, you know, the Manhattans or gin and tonics or anything like that, they're happy to do. They have a fire pit outside. Sometimes they have a band. Sometimes they have a food truck. It's such a cute, personal, local place. You must go see this bar, and you must go see Kate and Jesse.
The bartenders?
Who own it, the owners.
Oh, okay. What is the name of this bar again, or this hotel, I guess?
It's called the Myers Hotel Bar, and it's the Myers Hotel.
And so Jenny was mentioning ingredient-driven drinks that might come into play when we help Paul on his search. Paul in Overland Park, what are you looking for?
I'm looking for a consistent margarita. You go to a restaurant and I usually ask for a margarita. And these things vary incredibly. And is there something I could say to the people in order to sort of get a consistent margarita? I mean,
okay, and you want a consistent margarita, but what? How do you like your margaritas?
I don't know. I mean, I guess in terms of sweetness or whatever. But boy, they vary all over the place. I mean, it's like it's a meaningless phrase.
The margarita means nothing anymore.
So frozen or on the rocks?
The rocks.
Okay.
Well,
I would recommend Port Fonda in Westport. They make a wide range of margaritas from scratch. And I think that's part of the key is using fresh squeezed lime juice and just high quality ingredients, so you get nice pure flavors that it's not going to be overly sweet and it's well balanced. So it's you're going to taste the booze in there, but it's not going to be overly boozy as well.
I agree with that. Port Fonda makes a variety of different margaritas, and as Pete said, they're not too sweet and they actually have liquor in them, so that's a good thing.
Usually any restaurant that has a really quality selection of tequilas is going to do some of these more handcrafted margaritas. A lot of the Mexican restaurants, unfortunately, do use some sort of mix. And depending on how much of the mix they put in or not, it usually kind of all ends up really sweet, kind of a syrupy bomb. So I can see where the inconsistency might come in. But I think you have to seek out places, Mexican restaurants in particular, that have an excellent selection of tequila.
So, you guys, the whole idea of doing this show today is that Valentine's Day can be the kind of special occasion where you might want to go out for a nice drink or where you might find yourself drowning your sorrows. And for that, too, you might need a drink. So what do you recommend for the first scenario, the date drink?
Date drink. Well, I mean, I would take somebody to Sot if I were going on a date, because it's a small, intimate place. It's very comfortable, casual. They have kind of fun and flirty interactive drinks that will get you talking about, you know, what's in the drink and how it's made. They also have a fantastic menu there. I think the chef there is doing a really good job. So I think Sot would be fun. Because
where is that?
It's on Grand Boulevard. It's very close to the Power and Light, but it stands off by itself. And it's the kind of place where if you were taking a first date or someone, you know, obviously new to a relationship, there would be a lot of conversation around, you know, one of the drinks is served actually in an ice ball and you crack it open in order to get the liquid to come out. So there's kind of interactive pieces that you could do that I think would be really fun.
And the conversation would start before you even got in the door, because it's not the best part of town that, you know, a lot of the buildings aren't in great shape. And then you go to Sot and it's a beautiful old building and the renovations are stunning.
Mm-hmm. I would say Cafe Trio is another great date place. It's at like 45th and Main, just off the plaza. They've got a lot of signature martinis there and other classic cocktails. But they've got a couple of wine cocktails that I think are seasonal and fun as well. One of them is an apple cider sangria, where they incorporate Sailor Jerry's spiced rum with brandy, apple cider, Pinot Grigio, and ginger ale. So you've got a lot of different flavors there in kind of a seasonal take on sangria. And another one is the White Icicle, which is pine-infused gin, white cranberry, and Prosecco.
Well, let's talk to Matt in Overland Park, because I think Matt needs some help finding a drink of choice as well. Matt, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. So I'm trying to find a place that serves a good horse feather, and I haven't been able to find it in downtown Kansas City.
This is something that I feel like I have seen on menus a lot lately, but I think for reasons that I can't disclose, I'm having a hard time remembering where. Anyone?
I cannot believe he cannot find a horse feather. It's one of our claim to fame here in Kansas City. I mean,
Manifesto
how is this
has
possible?
A great one. Yeah, Manifesto below the Rieger has a great horse feather, I believe.
Ollie's Bar over in Martini Corner actually has kind of Ryan Mabey's recipe for a horse feather, which is just using the J. Rieger spirits on tap. So, I mean, there are plenty of horse feathers. Even Harry's Bar and Table specializes in a horse feather that's really quite good. So
you guys, what about this second scenario? I mean, we talked about the Good Date Bar, but what about the Lonely Hearts Club? I mean, where is a good bar or a good drink for the downtrodden?
I would suggest for either of your scenarios, Gina, Blue Stem Lounge, because it's a great date spot, but I love just sitting at the bar, and you'd be very comfortable sitting there by yourself. They probably have the best Bloody Mary in town. We haven't talked about those, but
That's usually, for most people, a brunch drink, but yeah. I like that you're going there.
Thank you. Well, it's a classic, I think, any time of day, and a lot of places just have a bottled mix, but Blue Stem makes their own, and the spice is just right, and it's really well-balanced and an excellent Bloody Mary.
Now, Jenny, you are taking us to W Bar, where Mary has already mentioned that they are excelling in the smoked drink arena. What are you recommending there?
So in the scenario where you have no date for Valentine's, we're not going to call them Lonely Hearts, these folks.
Yeah, because you might be totally content.
Chosen to be that way. So I would say grab your friend and make an appointment to go to the W Bar. You have to text to obviously get a reservation. It's a very small place, but Mike Strom is the bartender there. And I can't even name an exact drink because the menus change so often, but W Bar would be like an experience. And the place is so small, you just sit wherever they seat you, and you're surrounded by other people who are there to drink. Going and watching the show of the bartenders is the main thing, and understanding the artful cocktails put in front of you. So I think it would be a great way to celebrate your independence on Valentine's Day by taking a friend to W Bar. But it's very sleek and sweet. And sexy. It's got a really nice vibe to it. I mean, you wouldn't feel alone there at all. Everyone's a friend.
And Pete, before we go, some of the drinks that you are recommending stand out to me because they are named sort of gloriously. And I like a well-named cocktail that's just fun to order. And so I want you to tell me whether we're going to be discussing the drinks at the Jacobson or at the Rock Hill Grill, because those drink names stand out to me as excellent.
Sure. Let's go with the Jacobson. They've got some fantastic drinks there. High
Called?
On the Hog.
Yes. What is it?
That is a bacon-infused bourbon. And so it has Vermont maple syrup in the drink that's poured over a hickory-smoked ice sphere with brown sugar and rosemary bacon. So you get like these really bold, rich flavors that complement each other. Rosemary bacon, maple syrup, and bourbon.
It's not like, only well-named, it is aptly named.
Yes, absolutely.
High on the Hog.
You know what you're getting.
Well, that's at the Jacobson. And our time is up. We'll have KCUR's list of the best cocktails in Kansas City online later today. We hope it comes in handy. It'll be at kcur.org. Mary Block, blogging about food at Around the Block, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Jenny Vergara, Feast Magazine, fun recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Pete Doolin, author of multiple books on beer in Kansas City. I am impressed by your alcohol depth and breadth.
Cheers.
Listen back at kcur.org/centralstandard. KCUR Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Andrea Tudhope, and Suzanne Hogan. Special thanks to Laura Ziegler. Caitlin Troutman is our intern. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day. And our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs right here in Kansas City. I'm Gina Kaufman. Have a great weekend.